From KQED Public Radio, this is Capitol Notes, our weekly look at politics. I'm John Myers from KQED. Anthony York, the editor of Capitol Weekly, here sitting in the studio with me for another riveting edition of this
rivets.
Podcast.
I have rivets in my pockets.
Rivets in his pockets, ready to
drive them home.
And as always, we start on a little witty barb to talk about politics and public policy. Okay, let's talk about the budget again. Let's start off with
that's that original
budget problem thingy. Well, when we last left off last week, because of course we tape on Thursday and these get heard on Friday, we had not seen the legislative analysts' new numbers about the budget deficit. And there was all this talk around the Capitol that it was going to be, I don't know, maybe $4 billion bad. You know, like the speaker had even said that, I think, to you, right?
Yep.
Yeah, $8 billion.
Oh, well. Give or take.
So
what's $4 billion?
Out of a $40 billion, so, I mean, and I know this may not be the complete fair way to assess it, but what the heck. A $40 billion solution that was put into place in February.
Correct.
Really should have been a $48 billion solution.
Sure.
Because the revenue forecasts in that $40 billion solution were wrong.
As we found out.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
So what do we make of the $8 billion? what does the $8 billion extra red ink mean?
It means that there are going to be cuts. I mean, I think that taxes are probably off the table for June or whenever we have another whack at this again.
Given how hard they were to get this time.
Yeah, and I'm talking to Democrats. I was talking to an assemblywoman today who said, you know, what does this mean if there's another hole in the budget? And she said, cuts. It means cuts. You know, that's not to say there won't be some three-card Monty revenue accelerator or a fee, you know, that replaces a tax or whatever.
The old three-card Monty budget deal.
Yes, yes. Rabbit out of a hat. Saw a presiding officer in
so
half.
It's not impossible to see a gimmick, for lack of a better term.
No, I'm sure.
But
there,
the reality is taxes don't seem to be one of those options that are going to come
back.
I
mean, it was a little painful the first time,
right?
And I think that, you know, remember, the taxes will be in effect regardless of what happens on May 19th. I mean, there are whether or not they're in effect for 2 years or 4 years depends on what happens at the ballot, but for the next couple of years, Californians are going to be paying higher sales taxes, a surcharge on some income taxes, and some taxes are going to be determined by the director of finance and the treasurer on certain budget triggers.
Gets to
How's
the
that?
Budget. Well, it's a very How's nice that? Transition. Yeah. Nice. You're nice. Picking up this broadcasting thing really quickly.
It took me 5
it's
years.
It's only been like a year. Okay, so yeah, that's the other thing that we watched this week, which was kind of confusing. In some ways it's confusing, but in some I think it's fairly straightforward. How's that for a having it both ways?
That's kind of confusing.
But effectively what we're talking about is that there was a provision in the February budget that said if we have enough of the federal stimulus money that we can count as deficit relief for the state, then some of the egregious solutions, some of the taxes, some of the spending cuts get canceled.
Correct.
And the magic number is $10 billion. If you can count $10 billion of the federal stimulus money towards deficit relief, then we get rid of almost $3 billion total of cuts in taxes, with most of that being taxes.
Yeah,
about $1.8 billion, I think, in taxes, about $900 million in cuts. So it was a great big old hearing on Tuesday of this week where we talked about the trigger, as it called, and could the director of finance and the treasurer pull the trigger and get rid of those cuts? I hate that trigger term, but we've talked about that already last week a little bit. I didn't hear, and you talk about it as well because you guys covered it, but I covered it as well. I didn't hear anything so far that sounds like that the treasurer and the governor's budget director think they can do it.
No, I think that's
the short answer.
That was the sense coming out of that meeting on Monday, Tuesday?
Tuesday.
Was that we're probably going to fall short of that number, and therefore the tax increases and those cuts, and most of those cuts are to
social services programs,
that those will remain in effect, will not be able to be backfilled with these federal dollars.
Even though there was a long discussion over the methodology being used to calculate that federal money, and even though there are some real concerns by some of these interest groups, that the Department of Finance, the governor's Department of Finance, hasn't quite calculated the numbers right for some of the social service money, in particular some of the health care assistance money that the federal government provides us, and that they should be recalculated. They're misinterpreting the way the federal law works. Whether it's clear enough to say that that was a miscalculation, I think, in the final analysis, it's hard to see anybody saw that as clear enough yet.
Yeah, and it seemed to be, I mean, you covered more of this hearing than I listened to some of the testimony, but I was covering another hearing, which we'll
get
to next.
Easy on that transition. We're not there yet.
But there did seem to be a little bit of a sense that there was some politics involved in making that call on the number, a little bit. But I also got the sense, as you pointed out on your blog this week, that the treasurer was not happy.
Yeah, Bill Lockyer pretty much let the legislature have it. And let's not forget, he was a longtime legislator, was pro tem of the Senate when he left the legislature.
Pretty darn effective.
Yeah, and effectively said something like the legislature either couldn't or wouldn't do its job, and so here we are stuck with it. Yeah. And I mean, you know, even though I think the treasurer probably, you know, ideologically agrees with a lot of Democrats and a lot of folks who say you shouldn't be cutting that social safety net, I think it's tough to see how you get those numbers recalculated, especially because and I go back to this. I mean, this discussion's come up several times. The language in the budget bill that says the director of finance and the treasurer get to make this decision, the language isn't very clear. There's this whole thing about how you count the federal money. Does it have to be in hand? Is it supposed to be coming? What federal money is counted?
Right.
It was all written, as Lockyer very fairly said, in the middle of the night, in a private deal, not had a public hearing. No one could ask these questions. And so there you go. They're left with a muddy bill to try to interpret. And there were a lot of people in the audience who believe that this could end up in court, that some of the advocates of these social services programs, if the trigger is not pulled and therefore if those cuts go into place, could file a legal action saying it was misinterpreted.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things, and John Howard in our paper this week pointed it out, and some of the other coverage pointed it out this week, that the way it's structured sort of pits education groups against some of the social service groups.
Primarily because there is one way to get to the $10 billion number that we haven't talked about, which is that money could be used for education funding for the state, more federal money. Yeah,
right. And that even the LAO in their analysis of the budget said that in some ways there's almost an incentive to make cuts to the education portion of the budget because then you become eligible for more federal dollars, which would then set off this trigger. So
in essence, replacing state dollars with federal dollars.
Right.
Right. But that would be a huge political, as you guys were writing, it'd be a huge political fight, possibly.
Yeah. And you know, I think that this is just another, I think we've mentioned on this podcast before, some of the sort of smoldering embers, some of the tensions, underlying tensions that exist between education advocates and other stakeholders in the budget, primarily in the health and human services area, sort of led by the service employees union. It's the teachers union versus the service employees, probably the two largest players in Democratic politics. They both have huge stakes in what happens in the budget. And sometimes when there's a shortage of resources, these two groups end up at odds.
They also have huge stakes in what happens on May 19th on the ballot, on the budget ballot measures. And what's interesting about this fight about the budget deal as it exists and what dollars go where and what cuts have to happen or don't happen is that, you know, you couldn't help but miss the reality that, you know, one of the big critics of the way that the calculations were being done and all this thing we've been talking about was SEIU and some of the folks representing SEIU at this hearing. SEIU is also the union people are watching to see whether they'll put up any money to oppose the six budget-related measures on the ballot.
Right.
And so, you know, basically making you wonder, you know, one's a policy issue and one's a political, purely political issue, but they're both political in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
You know, and could there be any blending of the two or, you know, one decision made based on one and one on another? I mean, it's, who knows?
Yeah, and I think we should get a little more clarity next week. But again,
why next week?
I believe that's when SEIU's state council is deciding on the...
Put it on the calendar.
I believe the 23rd. Correct me if I'm wrong on that one. But But even if a decision, a policy decision gets made, the real question is whether or not they're going to spend money against these initiatives, which, again, we've talked about.
But. Well, and before we leave completely the whole that whole part of the budget mess and the election stuff, I mean, we certainly did have a very pointed op-ed in the Sacramento Bee this week from Meg Whitman, candidate for governor on the Republican side, opposing the spending cap, spending limit, Prop 1A, and the lottery proposal, 1C, and the education money proposal, 1B, calling them all kinds of things, you know, basically kind of a, you know, I'm not using her words exactly here, but something kind of a flim-flam game of some sort.
You didn't memorize it?
I didn't memorize it. But so
Gettysburg Address, Whitman op-ed. Come on, Myers.
Four score and Prop 1A. So she came, you know, that was a very formal declaration of hers. Steve Poizner, the insurance commissioner who's running, I think has now finally clarified his strong opposition to them as well.
I'm not impressed. I mean, I really.
But the point is, these are two people with money. I mean, we're just coming back to people who could have money, who could theoretically fund a no campaign.
But that's just it. I mean, if you're serious about it and you're really opposed to it, put up the money, open an account, and blow it up. I mean, I just think it's
put up or shut up. Is that what you're saying?
It's a little disingenuous to go around and sort of catering and pandering, you know, to
catering and pandering.
Yes. So you're involves heavy petting and sandwiches.
Easy on the podcast here. Okay. Please keep going.
But it's a little.
It's a little disingenuous,
It's a little disingenuous
back on track here.
To have this strong opposition and then not put up the money to reinforce that position. I mean, if Poizner and or Whitman or SEIU are really opposed to these measures, it doesn't seem like it would be that hard to take down the entire House of Cards if they wanted to. Now, SEIU has some real reasons why they don't want to. Like we talked about the cuts that would, you know, and if there's an additional $6 billion hole in the budget, a lot of that hole is going to be filled with
cuts.
$8 billion. Well, eight plus, but if the measures go down, it would be an additional six.
Right.
So 14 or 54.
Yes.
But that would be an additional hole in the budget that would have to be filled primarily with cuts to social services. So this is that's more of a simple calculation that SEIU has to make. Whitman and Poizner are playing a very different game, different political game, where they're catering to conservative political interests who are going to be instrumental in determining the winner of the next Republican gubernatorial primary.
One's a ground war and one's an air war, kind of, I guess I would argue. Yeah. I mean, the SEIU one is a ground war. It's in the trenches. It's this little bit, that little bit. The Poizner-Whitman thing has got to be a big strategic decision about how you position yourself, right?
One's a governing decision and one's a campaign decision, you know. And those are very different, you know. We haven't heard any details from that. I mean, Poizner came out against the budget right before the deal came out, you know, and he had some different ideas about how to close the state budget gap. I don't think we've heard that level of detail from Whitman. I could be wrong, and I'm sure if we are, I'll hear about it. But you know, it just it's another layer of politics that's being thrown on to this May 19th election that has nothing to do with May 19th and a lot more to do with June 2010.
Very well put. Nice cap to that part.
Caps, transitions. I mean, we're on a roll.
Well, let's go to a different part of government
pandering
money.
And catering.
Let's talk about federal stimulus money, since that was a topic this week. You covered the day that I was dealing with that hearing. You were dealing with the hearing about how some of the federal stimulus money is going to be spent.
Right.
I mean, I would just say, and then you talk about that hearing, it is still really hard to get your hands around how much money we're talking about and who controls the money. How much leeway or how much input do people inside the state capitol have where that money is spent versus how much is being mandated by Washington? I think that's still very challenging. But the hearing you went to, I guess some of that played out.
Well, and that's the $50 billion question that you're asking. And, you know, $50 billion is roughly the amount of federal stimulus money that's expected to come into the state.
Billion here, billion there.
And you know, there's a mandate to spend this money quickly. The federal government wants most of this money spent or at least spoken for by September 2010. And so this week I spent some time, too much time, a lot of time, 6 hours I'll never get back, in a joint utilities, energy utilities and commerce committee hearing. And it was looking at just those portions of the stimulus package dealing with energy and communications. There's some money for broadband expansion. And I sat in on this hearing. This was the first legislative hearing that I knew about that actually dealt with how to administer some of these funds. And it was really more of an informational hearing that legislators are just asking those same questions that you are asking, is what money is available, you know, and, you know, where is it going? And what role, if any, does the legislature have in controlling this money? There were no answers, I can tell you that. But what's clear, and I write a little bit about it this week, is that if you look at that hearing and what's going on in the energy sector and in the communication sector as a microcosm of what must be going on throughout state government, and I think it is, you know, it's in my story this week, I call it government on steroids, which is what it is. I mean, an example, Karen Douglas, the head of the Energy Commission, California Energy Commission, talked about a small program, $2 million program for energy retrofitting. So if your refrigerator is, you know, bleeding energy, there's some incentive program to give you a tax credit or a grant toward a new refrigerator, something like that. $2 million. Well, they just got $240 million from the federal government to add to that program. So what was
it went from $2 million to $240.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. They just got a check. So, and I think that that's what's happening all over the place. You have these little programs that were, just small programs and maybe, you know, getting off the ground. There's another one in the telecom area that was just started through a telephone tax 2 years ago. That one is going from $80 million to $400 million. I mean, it's just that's what's going on throughout government. And I have yet to meet anybody who can tell me how to track all the federal dollars coming in. Because, yep. You know, the large cities and counties can apply directly to the federal government for the money. The state.
That's some of the grant money, though, I think, versus the money that's. Anyway, but go ahead.
Well, but the state, even with the grant money, the state. And what came out of this hearing is that the state is trying, the administration is trying to coordinate the grant application. So rather than having these locals or individual companies apply directly to the feds for grant money, the Schwarzenegger administration wants everything to come in through, and they're organizing it through the chief information officer, Terry Takei, and have that office sort of coordinate all the grant applications and then make a block application. And then the state would prioritize.
This makes my head hurt just thinking about it.
Yeah, but that's part of the politics of this going on now, where, you know, the legislature is trying to figure out if there's a way for them to administer and also to make policy. I mean, I think you can make policy changes with some of this money. So this is sort of the fight. This fight is just beginning. But one of the things I'm really looking at just as an and bringing it back to the budget discussion is, you know, we just went through so much hand-wringing about how did we get here and, you know, how did we get into this. And you heard so much about spending one-time dollars on ongoing projects.
I was just about to talk about something like this.
So, I mean, this was, you know, that through the boom years, the dot-com boom of the 90s and the early – that we
– commitments that you couldn't honor in the long term.
Right. And you can see some of that already. If you watch how these dollars are being spent and some of the legislative jockeying, you see it happening again, where people are looking at this federal money and they're saying, "All right, well, let's create this program that does this," right. You know, and I think that there are some real red flags that, you know, and I'm not sure what the controls are on this.
Well,
I mean,
and
how
some
you
of
prevent it.
I mean, I would guess some of it. To be fair, I mean, it's just got to be incredibly difficult, even if you stripped away for a moment the politics, the angling, the, you know, however it makes any particular lawmaker look who can bring home the bacon on any issue. Yeah. If you just strip that away for a moment, it's got to be difficult to have a mindset as a policy official to be constantly talking about you don't have any money, to all of a sudden flip and say, we've got all this money.
And you have to spend it now.
Yeah. I mean, that's got to be really hard to shift from one gear to the next, in addition to all the political calculations and everything else that's got to go on.
Yeah. And that there are applications, you know, there are applications to get the money. So we have no money, but quick, we need your proposals, because by the end of March, we need to have our applications in line to get some of this money.
And I got to wonder, too, as we start this jockeying over who has control of what, how that's going to play out. Because one of the things that we've been trying to get more information on, and it came because some of the reporting that NPR on the national level has done about the stimulus program in different states has identified how some states have almost what they've designated a stimulus czar, some kind of clearinghouse, some kind of place that is overseeing the distribution of the money. We don't have that in California right now.
Not,
we don't really have. We've
not
got
publicly.
Right. Well, we've got a chief executive who has a role and wants a role. We've got a legislature who has a role and wants a role, and these local communities who have a role and want a role. And, I think it's really going to be fascinating to see who jockeys how to be.
Well, I mean, look, this is being run through the administration. The cabinet secretary, Vicky Bradshaw, has been placed in charge. The inside, underneath cabinet, there are, I believe, 11 different working groups in different policy areas set up to sort of identify what money is available and to try to see how it would filter. And this is what I mean about the administration trying to harness control. And, you know, the cabinet secretary reports directly to the chief of staff, Susan Kennedy. And I think that if you're looking for a stimulus czar, I think it's probably Susan Kennedy. Yeah.
Well, again, right. And this goes to your official or unofficial designation.
Right. But I think you're going to start getting pushback now. I mean, what I saw this week, and in the conversations I've had subsequently with different committee chairs in different policy areas, is that they do want to see a role for the legislature, but nobody seems to know what it is. And as long as there's that confusion, it's going to help the administration, you know, get a chokehold on this money. I think also we're going to see a reprise of a lot of the arguments that we saw during the budget. You know, the Republicans who I spoke to said, hey, look, we're talking about stimulating the economy, getting the money out the door. Well, if we're going to spend it, then we're going to have to streamline environmental regulations, because this money has to be spent by September 2010. You know, going through the regular environmental impact review process takes 3 to 4 years. So let's cut back on our – I mean – stop me when this begins to sound familiar, you know?
Stop.
Okay.
No, but you're right. I mean, right. We are coming back to a lot of what we've talked about how you make these things work in a timely fashion, pros and cons of changing the way that government works.
And so the overall point, stepping back, is, look, there's this one-time infusion of a heck of a lot of money, right? And yet attached to that money are a lot of the same political issues that we've been wrestling with. And a lot of the temptations that have gotten us into trouble over the last 10 years. And, it'll be really interesting to try to follow how some of this money gets spent and some of those decisions get made.
Nonetheless, the governor continues to say it's a great package, a good package. Great package was the phrase used today, Thursday, when he was on stage with the president in Southern California.
Everything gets kicked up a notch.
Who was using his town hall. And I wrote about this on the blog. I didn't write it anywhere else. But, far be it for me as a reporter to ignore little things like this, but I had to think about the governor talking about the president now versus the governor talking about then Senator Obama during the campaign.
The socialist.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, talking about all kinds of things in that speech in Ohio for John McCain. And how we can't
his
afford
little arms, right?
We can't. Well, yeah, there was the jab that he was skinny and scrawny, but it was also that we can't afford Senator Obama's policies, and now all of a sudden, great leadership. You know, and you said to me, difference between campaigning and governing. But at the same time, you look at the governor's California Republican Party, and they're not on that board. Ron Nearing, the chairman of the party, has put out emails the last 2 days criticizing the plan, criticizing the trip, criticizing Obama for going on The Tonight Show, which, by the way, is a favorite seat of Arnold Schwarzenegger, sitting next to Jay Leno.
Yes.
And, I mean, you know, and again, I guess it's just it helps this narrative that reporters like and Republicans hate of the governor is one person, the Republican Party somewhere else, et cetera, et cetera.
Well,
anyway,
what's interesting about the stimulus generally, I think if you catch a lot of Republicans in more candid moments, even they will cop to some of this. What's interesting is the increased clout of California. When you compare it to what we've been through over the last 8 years with the Bush administration and sort of a Texas view of the world versus now, you know, this stimulus package, and especially when the committee hearing I was sitting in, you know, the energy secretary, Stephen Chu from California, the chair of the House Energy Committee, Henry Waxman, a congressman from California, the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, you know, from California, that there's a and so when you look at the way the programs were structured on some of the energy stuff, a lot of it mirrors programs that were already in place in California. So California is very well positioned to qualify for a lot of these matching dollars. I don't think that's an accident. And I think that, you know, the education dollars and George Miller, you know, the leader of the House Education Committee, these things are not accidental, and I think that California is going to really benefit financially from the political clout it has in Washington. And I think what you're seeing from the governor is what you're seeing from Republican governors in some, but not all, other states. You know, the governor of Florida, the governor of Utah, Republican governors who are welcoming this infusion of cash, and they're not about to turn it away like we're seeing in Louisiana or South Carolina.
Especially when all of their options to date have been so difficult because of the economy.
Yeah.
Well, it'll just keep going.
It'll be stimulating.
It'll be stimulating. Maybe the next podcast will be even more stimulating.
Hard to imagine it could be any less.
With that ringing endorsement, we'll wrap it up. For Anthony York from Capital Weekly, I'm John Myers from KQED. See you next time.